Welcome to Roadcase, the podcast that explores the live music experience. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Josh Rosenberg, and I'll be taking you on a journey through in-depth interviews with performers and key people in the industry to explore the magic of live music, how it can be totally transformative for both fans and performers, and we'll look at how they take it all out on the road. It's going to be a great ride, so here we go. Hey everyone, welcome back to Roadcase. This is your host, Josh Rosenberg. Really psyched to be here for this episode with Lincoln Foley Schofield. Thanks for being here again. If this is your first time or if you're a regular listener, thanks for your support. And I'd like to remind you that there's a number of different ways you can get involved with the Roadcase community. A really easy one is to follow us on social media. We're at Roadcase Pod on the socials, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can follow us there. Another great way to get involved is to shoot me an email with your questions, comments, concerns, suggestions for guests, anything you'd like. I promise I'll get back to you. My email is info@roadcasepod.com. We also have a website, www.roadcasepod.com, where you can find out about different listening platforms and find out a little bit more about the show and about me if you'd like. Another great way to support Roadcase is to rate and review Roadcase on your favorite listening platform. For example, if you're on Apple Podcasts, which is super popular, you just scroll down a little bit to the rate and review part, throw down a bunch of stars, maybe write a couple nice words. Hopefully they're nice words about the show. That really does a lot to help support Roadcase. And if you're on Spotify, you can just click on that little check mark up above on the right-hand corner, and that will subscribe you to the episode. So I'm really psyched to have Lincoln Foley Schofield here. Lincoln's a musician, talent buyer, and promoter from New York. His past work as a promoter found him at SOBs in New York City, where he, even as far back as 2006, was doing online promoting and really pioneered an early use of social media in that regard. 2010, he was at Hill Country Live. 2012, he was a talent buyer at The Cutting Room, where he booked tons of top-name talent, including Billy Joel, Zac Brown, one of Pete Seeger's last performances, and he also was a talent buyer at the Opry City stage in New York City. Today, Lincoln is founder of Show X and the new Show X app 2.0 that's coming out this fall. It is an app-based technology that allows artists to sell their own tickets to shows and to book shows collaboratively. Basically, it's an alternative platform for artists, as Lincoln explains, that allows them to control their own shows, their own sales, and more importantly, according to Lincoln, to retain their own email data on ticket buyers in that process and to control their own routing. Show X 2.0 is coming out this fall, and you can go to showx.com or the Show X social media sites, and you can pre-register for 2.0. I'm really psyched to have Lincoln on the show and learn more about Show X. I know that you will find it really interesting, and I'm really glad that you're here. Thanks again to everyone for being here, and I'd like to thank Lincoln Foley Schofield for being here for this episode of Roadcase, and here we go. Hey Lincoln, how you doing, man? Thanks for joining me on Roadcase.
Hey Josh, great to be here, man. Thank you.
Yeah. So, are you in New York now? I think if I read correctly or something.
Well, I'm in New York. No. I'm in New York State. I'm in a old farmhouse in the middle of the country.
Wow, that's pretty cool. But you were a kind of a New York City guy, or? I think you lived in Nashville for a little bit. Is that correct?
Yeah. Both those things are true. I was based out of New York City for 12 years, and I was a working musician and independent venue booker. In those years, and I moved down to Nashville and kind of continued that thread and was representing artists and playing music and. That, you know, it was a, it's been a wild ride the last year and a half, 2 years. And so,
yeah, you think,
yeah.
not just for you, by the way.
Yeah. That's not lost on tough times in rock and roll, Josh, you know?
Yeah, I know. Really. Well, what's kind of the biggest challenge that you face, since that's kind of the first thing that came out of your mouth in terms of COVID? It's like, you're sort of, you're shaking your head and just going, what the fuck are we going? Did we just go through? But, kind of what are the biggest things that you sort of faced personally on that front?
Yeah, great question. You know, it wasn't, I think the hardest thing wasn't one thing. It was facing a handful of things simultaneously that were all very challenging. Mm-hmm. You know, it had COVID landed at a time for people who put on concerts at a really hard time, because they also had to now undo all of the concerts they had just booked for the spring. So there was a lot of undoing that you have to do in a professional, and there was disagreement from people who run venues about whether this was a legitimate reason to cancel a concert.
Yeah.
So that was challenging. It was challenging because I had been building a startup company for a year, and I was just about to close funding to build the first version of our product. And I think that I was doing that at just about the worst time in history to try to close.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. On a live music oriented product.
Totally.
Fuck. Oh, so you had this thing already. You first came out with it in 2020, the first version of Show X, but you've been obviously working on that for a couple of years.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. We'd been building,
fuck man. Yeah. Shit.
And then, oh, hold on. I got one more curveball.
Oh yeah. Please. Let's make this even fucking worse. Dude. Come on.
I became a father in May of 2020.
Oh, that's a good thing, man. Shit.
Yeah. You bet your ass awesome. Is a good thing.
That's awesome.
Hold on
1 second. Yeah, yeah. That was not in the number one point here.
Yeah.
What happened over COVID? That was got relegated to number two. Okay, that's fine.
Well, no, you're talking. We're talking about the compounding nature of challenges in the first pandemic in 100 years.
Yeah, I'm just teasing.
I know.
It's like it's all good. I got 3 kids, so I know. Like, there's this and this and this. Oh yeah, and my kid did this.
Yeah. Well, I think that when you now think about life from, you know, the lens of I'm a protector. I keep these people safe. And there's a lot of question marks about public health and how to do that. And then just you don't get much sleep in those first six months or so. So
I know.
So doing that all on top was I think about it a lot like baseball players swinging a donut before they go to bat. You know what I mean? It's just you know, the trials make you stronger. So when you get out of it, honestly, these days are still tough, but tough is relative.
Yeah. So bring me back a little bit. You had when was your child born?
She was born May 14th of 2020.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's specific. Okay. So she's like already a year and something.
Yeah. That's right.
That's great, that's right. Man. COVID baby. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, at least you got to spend a lot of time with her and hang out, and that's all good.
Hell yeah.
But that's got to weigh on you though. I really felt for, as a parent myself, there were some challenges with kids going to school and, et cetera, and, you know, travel with my ex-wife and stuff. And, but I really felt for the people with younger kids. I mean, there was so much up in the air with the kids, you know, being at school or masked or coming, you know, it's just, oh man. And, but not only that, you know, having to deal with school age kids being at home and little ones, you know, wow.
Totally.
But, you know, you're putting a silver lining on it. I mean, you were home during a really, really great time. And, you know, your kid would have been home anyway. It's not going to school yet. So so many different challenges. Yeah, I mean, it's insane. It's crazy.
Josh, when I look back at it, man, it's just so much of this journey of building a company, and so much of the journey of fatherhood is just growth. And if when I look back on the last 10, 15, 20 years of my life, in the last year and a half, 2 years of my life, it's just been this this period of explosive growth for me. And I really embrace that. So it's all good, man.
Yeah. So I have a real respect for, you know, your efforts with Show X, especially because you were hit so goddamn hard these 2 years of work and then we're like off the road. It's like, what the fuck? So, the first version came out in May of 2020. Is that right?
The first version came out, we closed a little bit of money in May of 2020, and we were mm-hmm. able to build the MVP, you know, in, we started a beta in September.
What's the MVP? Let's all.
Glossary
here. Maybe I can roll with you on some of the acronym and stuff.
Yeah, right you now. Bet. They refer to that as the minimum viable product. Basically, the kind of cliche arc of a startup is you sort of scrounge together enough money to build a super basic version of what the vision is, and then you kick the tires and you get people using it and telling you what's wrong with it. And, you know, you basically give it to the people you built it for and have big ears and, iterate upon that. And then prove that people want it. And that, if you can have more resources, you can build it to scale. And so that, you know, that was, we had a pretty classic journey in that regard. We released the product in November, of 2020. And then we built the full version of the vision and released that in May of 2021, after we had closed, a professional, seed funding round.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's right.
Gotcha. So, when it came out in the MVP, mm-hmm. I'm actually listening to you, the minimum version of the product or whatever you call it, were users using it for the reasons why you wanted, given the fact that there were no shows at that time?
Yeah, great question.
Or no live shows with people in the room at that, or very few. I mean, okay, I can qualify that a whole bunch, but you know what I'm talking about. It's like the industry was fucked at that point.
Totally. Yeah, and I mean, look at and for folks listening, we'll back into, you know, what Show X is and was designed.
That's probably my next question.
Was designed
keep
for
throwing all this intro.
We could not build what Show X was intended for in 2020. It was it would not have made any sense. So we built the infrastructure that could be useful at the time. And that, simply put, was a way for musicians to connect with other musicians, to share information, and to share resources on just surviving a pandemic. You know, it was a B2B network of musicians and venues, just, you know, like, when are you guys planning your tour?
How are you going to do it?
It
makes a lot of sense.
And there's so much you need to solve technologically with all of these foundational things that, a lot of important work that was lasting in our journey was done in that period of time.
Important work in terms of development.
Yeah. Important work in terms of, building stable technology. As somebody that came from the concert industry and, you know, being a musician, it's a much different journey in some ways to, understanding the intricacies of building technology today. And especially doing it in a very lean way, to solve the problems musicians face. I will say, and I think that this is kind of an interesting thing that I've felt that might be mm-hmm. interesting for your listeners. I think that there are incredible overlaps between the journey of say a startup founder and the journey of a musician, because you need to, you need to do so many, you need to be able to keep so many balls in the air that are all different. You need to be great at so many different things and multitask like no musician has ever had to, you know, for the,
right.
And then over time it changes, you know, it's like, you know, one day you have to be an expert marketer. The next day you have to build a website. The next day you have to build a concert poster. The next day you have to book a tour. And then the next, and then that night you got to go out and you got to kick some fucking ass in front of a crowd and win over some fans, you know, while you're posting to social media and engaging with your fans nonstop. I mean, it really is, you know, musicians today really do face so many things outside of being a musician to have a sustainable career.
Yeah. And are those things that kind of get addressed in the community that you created?
Very much so. The core of what ShowX is solving is that the foundational flaw of the concert industry is that musicians don't get the email data of the fans that buy their tickets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you buy a concert ticket, the promoter gets your email data and the musician does not. And this makes it much harder for musicians to develop new audiences. And that's key to their survival. As boring as an email list is, even in our social world today, it's still the most effective way to promote a concert. So ShowX simply gives musicians their own ticketing platform. So they own the email data of the fans that buy their tickets. And this gives them a massive advantage to build a sustainable career.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so as you're saying that, I'm thinking like, okay, well, venues have to be in this somehow, right? I mean, you can sell tickets to a show, but where is that show going to happen in your world?
Yeah, right on. I mean, you know, one thing to know about me is I've been an independent concert booker and promoter for many years. And as I was, working towards this solution, really for myself as a musician, I was recording the best record I'd ever made. I was, you know, I was planning on playing cities I've never played before. And I came back to this, you know, it's bullshit that I'm going to invest in developing these new markets. And anytime I go back to these cities, I'm not going to be able to directly connect with the people who have bought my tickets. And so I have to start over, or I have to go back to that venue. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but part of the problem here is that the nature of growing a career as a musician is to progressively play larger and larger venues.
Right.
But because venues promoters control ticketing, every time you level up, you now have to rebuild your marketing engine to be able to reach the fans that have bought your tickets previously. And this is so disempowering for musicians. But what you asked about venues, and there has to be something in this for venues, it's really, we believe, an equitable exchange. It sort of simply goes like this. With ShowX, musicians control the ticketing. Yes, they keep the email data of the fans that buy their tickets. But in exchange, they take the risk on themselves. So venues who traditionally put up a ton of money to be able to secure talent that can fill their venues, they don't have to take those risks. The artists take the risk on themselves. And as they sell tickets, the money flows right into their bank account, and this serves as their deposit, as their guarantee that traditionally would, you know, they would use that cash to book hotel rooms, rent a Sprinter, you know, have merch printed, things like that. So we actually are finding almost no resistance from venues, because venues are thrilled when an artist wants to, you know, like, you think that you're gonna, you know, you live and die by your ticket sales with ShowX. So,
right. So here comes an artist that has sold tickets to show looking for a venue, can go to a venue. Is that how it works? And then say, hey, Lincoln Hall, I've already sold. I got all these people that want to see me in Chicago. Can we do this? Is that how it works?
That's one of the way it works. Exactly.
Okay. What's another way?
Well, there's a few approaches now, because on one hand, let's say you run Lincoln Hall. I can say, hey, Josh, my band is sold. I'm not sure how big Lincoln Hall is.
It's 500. It doesn't need to be accurate. We can.
Yeah,
you want
right.
something 200? I don't know. Shoebus.
Yeah. But here we go. Let's say it's 500 capacity. Yeah. Right. If I can sell 500 tickets in your town, you don't give a shit. You're gonna be like, look it. Keep the ticket sales. Give me production cost, and I'm gonna make $30 per head on everybody that comes in my door. You know what I mean? On food and beverage sales.
Mm-hmm.
So if you mitigate the risk, but let's look at it another way. And this is one thing, you know, for musicians listening to this that, you know, maybe you haven't experienced enough to know exactly how the economics of this work for a venue, but this is really important. Let's say you're selling a $20 ticket and it's a 500 capacity venue. That means there's a $10,000 gross potential. So typically, whoever's the promoter or the venue owner has got to put up, let's say, half of that, $5,000, to just secure you as an artist to be able to put you on the marquee and the email blast on the website mm-hmm. to promote you and sell tickets.
Right.
And then half of that has to go out as a deposit. So $2,500 is out the door, right? But they're going to probably book 20, 30 shows a month. You know, so they have $50,000 at least in cash flow
mm-hmm.
that's just out in escrow outside of their bank account.
Right.
And then multiply that by the fact that they book 4, 5, 6 months out. So now an independent venue that's 500 capacity has hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash flow always outside of their bank account in order to secure talent at the level that can fill their venue. And then now compound that by the fact that they've all been fucking killed in a pandemic. They all have back rent, and now they have to come up with hundreds of thousands of dollars to be able to book this talent. It's totally untenable.
Right.
And so anyways, I just point this out that it's important for musicians to understand that this is why it's to the benefit of the independent venues who are like the arbiters of culture in our country to keep them in business. Go take the risk on yourselves, man. You know what I mean? They shouldn't have to lose a couple $1,000s because you didn't, you know, because you weren't able to sell the tickets that met the guarantee that the agent drove the price up on. That's a lot of stuff to break down.
No, it sounds it's very interesting. But how does an artist then so they sell their tickets on Show X, and then how do they connect with a venue at that point? And how do they also do that on an entire tour basis and sell tickets to, you know, several different cities at a time?
Yeah, right on. Right. So the main way we do it and our artists are doing it is the same way it's always been done. The artist books the venue in advance mm-hmm. and they put tickets on sale. It's really not that crazy of a turn. The fan has no difference in their experience. They buy tickets just through a ticket link, just like they've always done. A fan right now, if you pulled fans, they don't know where the money's going.
Yeah,
you know
what
I mean?
Yeah.
They don't have any. So with Show X, then the money just goes right to the artist, and it's backwards. Now the artist at the end of the day pays the venue based on the deal. Maybe it's a $500 production cost or it's 15% of ticket sales. But the whole point is the venue's risk is significantly reduced. Their marketing expenses are reduced, so they can give artists a higher percentage of ticket sales. And so importantly, they keep the email data of the fans that buy their tickets
yeah.
so that they can build upon that when they come
yeah,
back.
Yeah, they can continue to do that going forward. So where does that leave? Like you've been a booker for venues. You've been a talent buyer at
cutting room in 2012 in New York. You know, you booked for this Hill Country Live. You booked for SOBs for a long time, really early, you know, many years ago. Where does that put the talent bookers that work for one specific venue or promoters for, you know, a different set of venues? Kind of, does this represent, you know, potential sea change in the way that the industry works, or are you a disruptor?
I don't look at ShowX as a disruptor. I think of ShowX as the natural innovative flow of technology improving and the necessity for artists to be able to survive. Right now, it is extremely hard for musicians to have a sustainable career. And we believe that the root cause of that is that they do not keep the email data of the fans that buy their tickets.
Yeah, yeah.
And everything else that they feel is their problems are actually the symptoms of this disempowering premise. That because you don't make money selling you don't make money selling your music today, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to tour, but now you tour, and then think about it. Like, the nature of what you have to do to build a sustainable career today is to constantly develop new markets. And if you don't do that, you're not going to have a successful career. And so what has just unpack the things that have to happen to develop a new market. They are all outside of the control of the musicians. You don't control whether you get radio play in a new city. You don't control if you get the opening slot for an established band in that city. You don't control if you get a viral video. You don't control if you get media. You don't control if you get on a cool podcast that people listen to, right? The only things you really control are paid social media advertising. So then, let's say it takes three or four times to play a new city before you can even break even. Yeah. That alone doesn't allow a lot of musicians to even break out of the market, their home market. But let's say you finally do break out of that market and you can now sell tickets in a 100, you can sell at 100 capacity venue. And so now the booker or talent buyer of a 300 capacity venue comes to you and says, "Josh, I want you to, you sold out that venue. I want you to come play my venue." You say, "God, hell yeah, let's do it." Now, after all of those times you've been beating down the doors in that city, you can't even reach the email that you can't even reach the fans that bought your tickets. You have to start over.
Well, you depend on a promoter saying that you're coming to that venue, right? And then you hope that people show up.
I know, but look it, the promoter has to start over too. You know, I've been on this road a lot of times as a promoter, mm-hmm. and you think because an artist sold out that venue that kind of feeds into yours, you're going to be able to sell as well as they do, and then you don't, and you scratch your head. But that's part of the problem. It's a design flaw. It's not anybody's fault.
Yeah.
You asked about promoters, and you asked about the people that our new paradigm, mm-hmm. how it affects everybody. Things change a little bit. Promoters, just because there's Uber in New York City doesn't mean people don't take yellow cabs. Promoters serve an important role in the music industry, and they always will. They're like a bank. They can move artists very quickly along in a new market, but they don't give you fucking access to the email addresses of the people that bought your tickets. So it's kind of like, do you want to rent or do you want to own? It's more painful to own, but in the long run, it's a better long-term strategy.
So what has been your relationship with social media in terms of bands being able to promote and going directly to their fans? I mean, you started out, I guess, you know, when you were at SOBs in New York, you know, I had read that you were using social media in ways that had to that point not been used. So you've clearly had a journey of using social media in order to promote acts into particular venues. So what's that look like over time, and why now the emphasis on email when a lot of artists just go direct to their fans on the socials?
Yeah, right on. This is an important question that you're asking. I'll answer the last question first. the truth is that by far the best way to promote a concert is through the email addresses of the fans who have bought tickets to see that artist in that city previously. It's not even close. Anybody that has ever had the burden of promoting a concert before mm-hmm. knows this very well. Social media has its place, but you cannot, absolutely cannot promote a career or a tour successfully solely on social media. You need organized email lists broken down by the cities that you can directly reach the fans in those that have previously bought those tickets. That's how you grow. Mm. That's just the truth. I've had a pretty fascinating journey with social media and concerts. I moved from Key West, Florida to New York City. I got there in June of 2006. And I was just a working musician. I had to have hand surgery, and it was it allowed me to play guitar. It fixed my hand so I could play guitar. However, I had to take months off of playing.
What happened? Did you like bang up your hand or something?
Yeah. I mean, I was a hockey player and a knucklehead, you know, growing nice. Up. But
you hit somebody.
But,
your face and your teeth look pretty intact. So, you know, I guess you hit them first.
Yeah. Right. No, I took a lot of hits, brother.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to say about how this came about was that, you know, in this time, MySpace was having its moment, and MySpace was an incredible tool for musicians at the time, because it didn't matter whether you were the Rolling Stones or you were me, you know, mm-hmm. you had four songs that you could put on, and everybody kind of was on a similar playing field. But what was incredibly useful is that you could reach the people who were following this artist that was like you. And so I got hired to SOBs in New York City, who had very diverse programming from bachata, merengue, salsa, hip hop, and then into rock and roll, which I started working on. And so it required constantly promoting to different fan bases and being able to reach them. And so a lot of marketing tools in the early days were developed. That skill set and those techniques led me to MTV, where I would promote the different TV shows on MTVU. Mm. And, you know, this is like the dawn of the iPhone and the dawn of...
Oh, yeah. We're going way back here to the Ice YouTube, Age, man.
YouTube. But look it. I mean, it's the way... How you promoted concerts was changing, and the industry in general was changing. Mm-hmm. So anyways, with all of that being said, I'm not somebody who set out to be a entrepreneur. I'm not somebody who wanted to be a founder of a company. You know, I'm a musician. I wanted to play music with my friends and be at concerts and, you know, celebrate life, all of that. So, I'll tell you, you know, because I ran the rails of being a live performer and being on the business side of the industry during the day, nobody was trying to solve this problem. And I'd been keeping an eye on it for years and years. And then when I was going out and I was going to push a record that I really thought was going to be meaningful in my own career as a musician, it wasn't till then that I was like, you know what? Fuck that, man. I am not doing this. I am not just throwing away, you know, my heart and hustle and with everything I know about concerts. At this mm-hmm. point, I'd put on thousands of concerts, sold millions of dollars worth of tickets. You know, I'd been through it all in the club level concert industry. I just said, you know, there's definitely a better way to do this. And technology is incredibly powerful today. So, you know, with the help of friends who are heavy in tech, we, you know, we built ShowX.
Well, and, I mean, obviously you were on both sides of the coin. You were an artist and you were working for venues. Did the venues you worked for, they did not share emails with the artists, obviously, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
No, it's true.
Now, you know, then you're kind of on this side. Now you're on sort of the artist side, but like representing artists as a whole and wanting them to be able to be able to grow their own, you know, creative aspirations in more of a direct to fan, method. And I love that about this. I really hope that it works. Now you have investors obviously backing this, the app, like what's their interest? How do you make money? How does the app make money? And do musicians pay a fee to get involved, or, and is there a place for fans on the app also? If there's interaction with musicians, that might be something kind of to be of interest, that sort of like maybe down the line, but that's sort of a lesser area. But I'm more interested in sort of what the financial outlook is for the app itself. I'm just curious.
Yeah, you bet. Well, look, there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
The first
I'll
is
try to ask more simple questions in the
no,
future.
No, but I got it. So the first the first and really importantly, musicians don't pay a dime for ShowX. Okay. ShowX is completely free for musicians. The business model is that ShowX makes money off of ticket processing fees that the fans pay, mm-hmm. just like they pay when they buy all the other tickets.
Right.
How much are those? Our processing fees are 15% on the lowest end of the industry. A lot of the tickets you buy are twice that. So
yeah.
we're trying to be as fan friendly as possible there. Josh, I do just want to take a second and go back to something you mentioned.
Okay.
ShowX is not about villainizing promoters, venues by any means. The way that the concert industry was built is like a house whose foundation was built backwards. You'd already bought the land, the foundation, somebody fucked it up, and then now it's just cheaper and easier to build it all up on top of this and live with it. Because ever since you took a horse and buggy to the theater, you bought a ticket from the venue, and then stars were born, and so agents started representing those stars and started negotiating deals with promoters. And that was how it's always worked for decades and decades. And then the advent of the internet and then online ticketing. And it wasn't like anybody stopped and said, okay, now that there's online ticketing, all of this fan data is pouring into these promoters, we should stop. The truth of it is, promoters and venues take giant risks on securing talent, like we've already talked about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so keeping that data is a fair exchange. We're talking about an equitable exchange where the artists keep this data so they can build a sustainable career, and they do not require the promoters and the venues, who are just trying to get by right now, man, to take giant risks on them, especially if money is lost. So
I agree. Yeah. So totally. I agree with what you're saying. What was the primary reason why promoters were not sharing information, fan information with acts? If there was nothing like what you're suggesting with ShowX in the past, then what's the risk of allowing artists to have direct access to their fan base when having direct access to your fan base just increases your contact with those fans and increases the likelihood that they return to a show at perhaps the same venue?
You know, Josh, I'll tell you a story from early in my career. My job was to export the email addresses on a weekly basis of all of the concerts that had happened the previous week and put them into organized lists.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember early on, as I had that task, saying, do I have to send these email lists to the artists too? Because, you know, the fans bought the tickets to see the artist. And the owner at that time said, God, no. If we did that, what would they need us for? What I think he's saying is that it makes it easier to go to another venue because now they can directly reach their fans. But this is it's a chicken and egg problem.
Yeah.
The venues have to take the risk, right? So they're putting up money, and this is really, I mean, this is really valuable information. So it's kind of like the reward you get for putting up these thousands mm-hmm. of dollars mm-hmm. for it. But nobody ever talks about this. Nobody ever talks about this. And part of what we're doing here is we're removing that risks. ShowX is a tool for the type of artist who really wants to own their career, who really believes in the potential of their growth, and will take ownership and take the risk on themselves. We're not saying that the way that it's been traditionally done is wrong. We're offering an alternative paradigm that we think is much more sustainable in building a lasting career. And in doing that, we de-risk venues so that it's just as it's not hard for them to accept this model.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I did not want to create a discussion where we're blaming particular sectors of the industry for the way that it is. You know, I just wanted to sort of explore with you exactly how it impacts all those different players, because it really does touch all the different players in the live music industry and in ticket selling and venue and in promotion, et cetera. But we were talking about the business aspect also, and then we started going in the email direction.
Well, let me jump in just and talk about how promoters, agents, managers, how this implicates or the implications for them with this approach.
Okay.
Because we spend a lot of time working with them on this and building this for them.
Mm-hmm.
Agents and managers are on the artist team. They want tickets sold. And one of the things that they're loving about ShowX is that they get real-time updates as tickets are sold. Traditionally, because a venue promoter controls ticketing, they have to ask them for ticket updates. And I can tell you, as somebody who's been a promoter, it's a real pain in the ass, because if tickets aren't selling well enough, the implication is that I'm not marketing it hard enough. And it's, you know, most folks, you know, that's a little bit of a pain point. So with ShowX, you get updates in real time as tickets are sold. The artists, the managers, the agents all receive them. From the venue standpoint, or from the promoter standpoint, rather, there are some key things that we have that are really helpful to them. The first is that we allow artists to sell tickets without having a venue confirmed. And so a promoter, part of what they are always dealing with is they have headlining acts booked, but a million people are trying to get the opening slot for these gigs. And so what promoters and venue operators can do is say, hey, if you want this opening slot, go out and prove that you can sell 20, 30, 40 tickets to the show. And if you can, I'll confirm the show. And if not, there's a whole lot of ShowX venues that would love to have your 20, 30, 40 tickets, you know, from breweries and vineyards and bookstores to coffee shops and Irish pubs.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, this really is a tool that that promoters will be able to use as like a farm system for them.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that only mostly on like the 30, 40, 50 tickets, kind of a lower level of tickets being offered when they're like venues that are not necessarily traditional, like they're pubs or, you know, smaller bars or bookstores, like you said, or those kind of things?
You know, we've actually found that it's a real gamut, because part of what ShowX is all about is making it easier to develop a career. And so, you know, you're starting, you know, you got to start somewhere. What you might be able to sell three, you know, we have a couple artists right now that can sell 300-400 tickets mm-hmm. in a couple markets, but they go on tour and they sell 20-30 tickets in a lot of different markets, and they're just playing house concerts, and they're playing, you know, wherever we'll give them a shot. But you have to do that, because you know, I mean, a band has to have, you know, 5, 6, 7 markets where they can sell hundreds of tickets to be able to, you know, sustain a few guys and girls.
Right.
But then, you know, I mean, we have artists that can sell, you know, over 1,000 tickets in markets too. So it's not sort of just one class because even the biggest bands there are right now, they don't, every market they sell different in, you know, and it can be quite the variance.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's all great. That's all great stuff, Lincoln. Can we talk for just a minute about the process? Like, okay, so I'm a musician. I want to use ShowX. What do I do? What do I get? How do I actually begin to make fans aware of the fact that I'm selling tickets through ShowX? What are my first steps and second steps?
Yeah, you bet. I think one thing that's really cool to, you know, make your listeners aware of is ShowX 2.0, what we're launching here. And the thing that's really special about it mm-hmm. is we're multiplying the opportunities for musicians to perform in a way that's never before existed. So what we've built is a data-driven tour building tool that delivers the best tour routes, opportunities for co-bills, and venue matches for our users. In one click, we can route a tour for our musicians based on matching data points with other musicians' tour routes while they're still being booked. So, think about it. Currently, musicians find out about each other's tours most often after the tour is announced. Mm-hmm. But now we're letting musicians book their tours collaboratively, working off of opportunities and established audiences together. Some things that we believe are that musicians helping musicians has incredible untapped potential. And we believe that the future of touring is going to be collaborative. So, these tools are also for venues. We provide venues with tools they've never had, including a database of musicians available in their city that can be sorted by date. And that can serve as a backstop for cancellations, to make co-bill creation easier. And it also allows new businesses entering the concert industry an immediate network of talent. Hmm. So this is what I think is like the coolest, most exciting thing for musicians. Mm-hmm. As venues update their available dates right. on ShowX, musicians looking to play in those dates and in those cities are immediately notified. So in these ways, ShowX is delivering an approach to touring that's never been seen or tried, using technology to create opportunities for musicians to perform that otherwise would not have been possible. And all of it is built on top of a new paradigm where musicians control ticketing and own the email data of their fans.
Yeah, yeah. So if I'm a musician, I can go in there. How do I start out? I mean, if I'm selling tickets through ShowX, how do I tell my fans that?
It really is just like building any other ticket link. We have not even touched that wheel. Mm-hmm. It's you put your artwork, your bio, mm-hmm. The information on the venue, the city, the address, the ticket price. Mm-hmm. We give you a link, you email it, text it, post it on social media.
Right.
And fans just follow the link and buy tickets. Just,
right. Has there not been any kind of resistance to buying tickets when there's no venue?
So that, Josh, that's actually a really surprising one to a lot of people. We've done tons of research on this. Mm-hmm. The truth is fans largely don't give a shit about the venue. They care about the artist.
Yeah.
There's other companies that have proved that out over time. But right now, there is always a group of your fans that will support you. And if they don't want to play, if they don't want to go see the show at the venue that you've booked, they can get a refund, but it's just not what we're finding. Yeah.
They'll support you and they'll go to the venue. It's not going to prevent me from seeing any act though. Yeah. If I'm a fan, I'm going no matter what venue it is. Of course, I totally 100% agree.
Yeah, right on. Yeah. But also, there's one other thing to factor in that really isn't talked about, and this is for the case where you sell tickets without having a venue. A lot of our artists just sell tickets with the venue in advance, but look at it this way: let's say you put on a show in Nashville, and you sell 200, 300 tickets. Now you could go play a 300 capacity venue, but now you're also qualified to open for a much bigger show. Mm. So you might end up, because let's say the Ryman Auditorium is struggling for ticket sales on the show that they have that night. They might just say, you know what? Let's grab this guy who's sold 300 tickets. That's that's 20% of their capacity, you know? Mm-hmm. And they would love to have 300 people buying food and drinks and merch and filling up their room. Yeah. So there are a lot of, you know, we don't talk about this because people, you know, because it seems like a radical move, but the truth is there are a lot of opportunities that are opened up when you sell tickets before confirming the venue.
Yeah, clearly. God, it's all good stuff. So, when is this? So 2.0 is coming out in the fall. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
How many users do you currently have?
Oh, I'm definitely not telling you that, but we have
not?
A lot.
Why not?
And they're awesome.
Ballpark it. You're not even ballparking it for me?
Absolutely not.
Are you happy with the numbers that have come in so far of artists that are using the platform?
Oh, yeah. We wouldn't still be doing it if we weren't. Okay. Yeah, I mean, look at the truth about the journey of building products that people love is that you grab people who really want what you're working towards, mm-hmm. and then you just get real close to them and you just build it for them, and you listen and you iterate and you rebuild and you iterate and you listen and you just keep doing that until you have something that people are screaming for.
Yeah.
And we have just been in this meditative process for months now.
Yeah.
And we're so excited about what we're about to release.
Yeah, man. I mean, you're getting out there at this time when like everybody's getting out there. It's like a super exciting time now after having gone through this like shithole valley of like depression over the last 18 months. But you were hard at work, and now, you know, you're coming back at it when everyone's getting back at it, right?
Yeah, right on. I mean, look at, you know, we're all navigating this fall and winter. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a heck of a challenge again for all of us. But you know, I think that all the signs are that this spring and summer are going to be a closer return to normalcy, and that's what we're all hoping and working hard towards.
Yeah, for sure. Can you talk to me a little bit about this Opry City stage in Times Square that you were working for, and then like it shut down, it seemingly abruptly, from what I read. What was up with that? It sounded like a phenomenal idea to have like an Opry presence in Times Square. That's cool. I mean, I would go.
Totally. Yeah, Josh, that was one of the most exciting and, you know, disappointing journeys that I took in my professional career.
Yeah.
I have so much love for the history and the history of the Opry, their culture. And I sincerely mean this when I think that like they're just doing a real dynamite job, you know, navigating in, you know, the waters of today, with that. And it really was an honor to be on the team, to learn about, to just be a part of that ride. The short version, or my kind of postmortem on it is that it was too big, that it was too big of an endeavor. Mm. And had we just done it on a smaller scale, it would have been an immense success. But you know, look at, people come from all over the country to go, you know, to New York City,
yeah,
to learn, to take a yellow cab, to see the Statue of Liberty, to eat pizza,
yeah,
to go to Ground Zero, to all of that. And going and seeing the culture of another
city,
important, yeah, American city,
yeah,
it isn't white. You know, it's not like you go
made
to
out
Nashville.
A bit in line with what was going on.
Yeah, you don't go to Nashville to go see a mini version of the Statue of Liberty.
No,
you know,
you go to Vegas to see the Eiffel Tower, though. Come on.
Yeah, all right, touche. Well,
no, you know, I'm not defending one side or the other. That just sounded funny going, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, was it that it was in Times Square, you know, maybe like a different neighborhood or something? I don't know.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know. But it's like trying to invent a venue that has like that's, you know, super genre specific is kind of an interesting concept. But yeah, you're right. That overlap is that. So it was kind of like just conceptually, just people weren't coming and they just kind of rolled it all up.
Well, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say it like that because a lot of people did come, but I mean, the venue is like 1,000 capacity anyways, mm-hmm. over 4 floors, 2 venues. So,
yeah.
The amount of people you had constantly to be successful was very, very difficult. We did some really, really awesome stuff there that I'm really proud of. And the team I got to work with there was outstanding as well. But, you know, I mean, look at it this way. You're like, think about the history of New York City venues. CBGBs, you know, wanted to be country and bluegrass. And what are they famous for? And SOBs, where I started my career, you know, SO Sounds of Brazil. But they're probably best known for launching the careers of the Fugees and Kanye West and Alicia Keys and hip hop and R&B.
Yeah.
So, you know, being genre specific, like, so I think so much of, you know, being successful as a music venue is serving the people that come to support you.
Are you saying that they could have brought in other acts from other genres to that venue and it may have survived?
I don't think that is okay. A couple things on that. First of all, the location is Times Square, and as a longtime New Yorker, it wasn't aimed at New Yorkers per se.
Right. What street was it on?
49th in Broadway.
Oh, so not like super down there, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, but it was I will say, man, as somebody who's, you know, been deep in the country music scene in New York for a long time, there really is a great audience for country music in New York. Mm-hmm. However, that journey with Opry City Stage was required so much business constantly to be successful that it couldn't fly in the long run.
Yeah. Man, Lincoln, you've done so many different things in the industry. It's just, it's fascinating. I wish I could talk to you for a couple hours, but, what are you most excited about, with this new launch going forward?
You know, musicians helping musicians. Mm-hmm. I really mean, like, the one thing I'll tell you a couple things that I've really embraced over the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years working on this journey. I talk to musicians on a daily basis, and all through the pandemic, like, I don't, like, we know it, but like talking to them every day, musicians are hurting so bad. Mm-hmm. And even getting back to touring and now having to cancel concerts again. But one of the things that has been a consistent theme is that musicians are totally open to working with other musicians, sharing resources, sharing opportunities. And especially if they're, you know, if it's an equitable exchange. And so we've really worked hard to design a platform where musicians can build tours collaboratively with other musicians.
Yeah.
And I think watching that unfold, is really going to be something. And I think there's a lot of musicians who have already worked with musicians they met on ShowX. And that's really, you know, that's really brought to our team, a lot of, reinforcement that, we're onto something here, you know? And so now we've really quadrupled down on that, mm-hmm. and built tools that we think are going to serve musicians in ways that no other tools really deliver right now. Yeah. So that's what I'm most excited about, for sure.
Being able to have that the platform where musicians can work collaboratively, because you think there's really a need and a desire and just the acceptance that that's sort of really something that musicians enjoy doing and can benefit from.
Absolutely, and that there's there's untapped power in that,
in collaboration. Yeah,
that's right.
So the flip side, what's the biggest challenges you've had to date? And without let's not talk. COVID doesn't count as an answer.
Yeah, well, Josh. To be honest, man, my team will tell you, but like, my challenges change on like a 2-week basis.
What's the biggest one right now?
Yeah. Right. Right now we're building up all of our marketing and messaging, and you know, we're working with musicians on I just want to tell the story sincerely about like the heart that's behind Show X, why we did this, all of that. But like, when you have to distill, like, you know, we've been talking a long time now, right? Show X is a big story to tell.
It is.
And being able to tell it in a very short, punchy, succinct way that is simple and resonates with musicians is a real challenge. Mm-hmm. And so in a long form interview like this, you know, we get to talk about the points and the counterpoints and the history of the concert industry and why it's so important. But when you're just looking at like a flash ad on a social media, yeah, and things like that, it's very challenging.
Yeah.
So really distilling our storytelling down is probably the current challenge that we're working on.
I think it's great. And I can tell that it's something that you really come at from the interest of the artist standpoint, and it's kind of the interest of the whole live music industry in general, and that you've had so much experience and have so much at your back that you've gone through already. And, you know, from what I can tell, you are someone that wants to help others collaborate and are looking at kind of the best interest of artists. And I, you know, I commend you for that and congratulate you for getting this far, at least, you know, I wish you the best.
Yeah, Josh, I appreciate you taking the time to let us share our story here, and thank you for the kind words and the interest, brother.
Yeah, right on. Thanks for being here, Lincoln. I really appreciate you telling your story, and, I wish you the best of luck, and I hope we can connect at some point, man.
Wonderful. All right, Josh, thanks so much, man.
Take care.
See ya.
Thanks. Okay, that was Lincoln Foley Schofield. So psyched to have had the opportunity to talk to Lincoln about the new Show X app. If you're interested in learning more about Show X, you can go to showx.com. The Show X app 2.0 is coming out really soon. You can find out more information about all of this as well on their Instagram, and that's the handle at joinshowx. You know, to hear Lincoln talk about it, it is in the interest of the artists to book their own shows and retain their own emails so that they can continue to approach the same individuals that buy tickets for their shows. They can do that in the future and keep in touch with those that are really interesting in coming to their shows. And, you know, to hear Lincoln talk about it, he's trying to help artists move forward in their careers. And of course, you know, with Lincoln, there's a financial element to it as well, that he is the founder of this app and there are investors in this app. But, you know, I really like the artist empowerment aspect of the app. And to hear Lincoln talk about it, he says the future of booking will be online, and that there are a ton of opportunities present when you sell tickets as an artist before you secure a venue. So that was interesting to hear him talk about that. You know, I don't have a lot of personal experience enough to say whether or not I think this is going to undoubtedly be a success or not, but for Lincoln. But, you know, I applaud this effort, and Lincoln's clearly very motivated. He's really well informed. He has tons of experience at his back in booking and promoting. So you guys, listeners, tell me what you think. Let me know. You can send me an email at info@roadcasepod.com, or you can check in with me on the Roadcase Instagram. We're at Roadcase Pod, and we're also on Twitter and Facebook. You can do that. And you want to learn more information about Show X, that's again showx.com, and their app is coming out very shortly, and the Instagram is Join Show X. So thanks again for being here and listening to this episode, and I want to send a special thank you to Lincoln Foley Schofield for being here to share all this great information with me on this episode of Roadcase. Thanks again so much for listening. And I'd like to encourage everyone to get involved with Roadcase. You can do so in a number of different ways. You can email me at info@roadcasepod.com with questions, comments, and even suggestions for guests. Or you can follow us on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We're at Roadcase Pod. And we have a YouTube channel called Roadcase Podcast. And of course, you can subscribe to this podcast on your favorite listening platform. And if you could please rate and review the podcast while you're there, that would be great. So I want to thank Waltzer for this awesome theme music that we have. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening to Roadcase. We have a lot of great episodes coming up, so I'll see you on down the road.